Welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, proudly sponsored by AJR Sports Science and Healthcare Consulting. At AJR, we are committed to offering a comprehensive range of exceptional services, including applied sports science analytics, healthcare and sports medicine consulting, and leadership and coaching development. To learn more about AJR, visit their website at ajrsportsscience.com. I'm your host, Andrew Rizza, an allied healthcare professional with over 25 years of experience. My career has primarily spanned private physical therapy and public school athletics. Driven by curiosity and a passion for the industry, I created the Behind the Sports Medicine podcast to explore the ever-evolving landscape of healthcare with a focus on sports medicine, physical therapy, athletic training, and sports science. Each week, we'll dive into the challenges healthcare professionals encounter and discuss how collaboration can enhance understanding within the industry. Our goal is to improve the experience for patients and athletes alike. Now, on to the show. On this week's Behind the Sports Medicine podcast, I'd like to welcome Moore McCarthy. Moore is the co-founder of Athletes Better Together, a supportive community amongst athletes of all ages and abilities, utilizing the power of connection through mentoring. Relationship building is the core of their mission, connecting rising college student athletes as they transition from high school to college sports with a mentor. She's also the former director of college and university partnerships at NDUR for Athletes, bringing mental health and wellness to college athletes by way of an app. She's also a former sergeant of the Massachusetts State Police. She has recently retired after 25 years of service. She made a major career change to law enforcement in the paramilitary organization of the Massachusetts State Police on her 34th birthday. Her assignments included patrol, registry of motor vehicles, academy medical staff, office of the chief medical examiner, Department of Recreation and Conservation Liaison, Disabled Persons Protection Commission, and the Attorney General's Office for Human Trafficking Unit. Moore is also a retired, licensed, certified athletic trainer who has spent 15 years in college athletics caring for the health and well-being of her student athletes. She received her bachelor's degree at then Salem State College and her master's degree in health and human development at the Pennsylvania State University. She went on to be an assistant athletic trainer at Colgate University in upstate New York, where her primary responsibilities were to women's athletics. She then was the head athletic trainer at UMass Dartmouth, managing 23 intercollegiate sports teams. She then went on to be the assistant athletic trainer at Harvard University, working with men's soccer, women's basketball, and women's lacrosse. Moore has had a storied career in the service of others, speaking for those who cannot speak for themselves, building bridges, communities, and lifelong friendships. Human relationships are at her core. She believes we all have a purpose in this world. We need to take care of one another and support one another to make this all work. She is an advocate and supporter of mental health and believes it should be a top of mind in any space. Now, on to the show. Welcome to this week's Behind the Sports Medicine podcast. I have Moore McCarthy, retired athletic trainer, retired state police sergeant. Moore and I go way, way back. I was a punk know-it-all senior at Northeastern University in the athletic training program. And I was placed at Harvard University, where she was an athletic trainer in her, I believe it was your third job out of college. Am I correct on that? And in 1995, so a long time ago, and we just reconnected. Maura's doing some amazing stuff. One, she was an amazing athletic trainer. I learned a lot from her being a senior, trying to go out in the world. Between, Moore, Emo, Gary, TK, Anthony, you know, the whole crew over at Harvard was amazing. And I still look back at those days where, you know, learning and looking and watching and listening to you guys and what you did kind of shaped me as a young athletic trainer. And I still use examples with some of my interns over that time. So thank you for being you and connecting again. It's awesome.
Sure. I love it.
Tell me a little bit about, or I guess the listeners, a little bit about your journey as an athletic trainer and how'd you make the shift to be state police?
Okay. So, and I had always taken the civil service exams. Like when I was younger, my dad used to always sign me up. He wasn't in law enforcement or a police officer, but he was actually a bartender. It's kind of funny, but he had a lot of law enforcement friends. So he would always know when the exams were coming up. He signed me up. Said show up at Lynn Classical on Saturday afternoon and take this exam. And I went and I'd go through the process. And I remember at least taking at least two exams. And then I'd actually got called for a local department and I was like, nah, I'm all set. My dad had passed away in my junior year at college. So I didn't want to sort of live out his dream, but I always honored it. Like, while he always, you know, thought that that was such a noble profession and that I would be good at it. So I took the exams and I never did it. I went to graduate school at Penn State. I came back, did my thing, stayed my course in athletic training. And then I was, I think, at UMass Dartmouth. I had one of my student athletes. He was going to take the test. And I was like, great. And I'm always a supporter. Like, I'll drive you there. We'll do it together. Make sure he gets there. Make sure he gets on bed 7 o'clock in the morning. So his exam ended up being in New Bedford. Mine was in Brighton. We both took the exam the same time. He got a 70. I got a 97. He never got called. I actually got called. Went through the process a little bit. And then the process is lengthy. It's over like a year and a half long. And I simultaneously got offered a job at Harvard. So I didn't take the Massachusetts State Police position. I didn't continue with the process. I literally walked away from it saying, my dad's dream, not mine. I'll be out. Stay my course, went 6 years of college in athletic training. This is my calling. Ended up taking the job at Harvard, 7.5 years. Loved every minute of it, traveled the world, met some amazing people. And I didn't know it at the time. But now, after the fact, I realized, like, I was getting a little burned out.
Yeah.
And I was probably 34 or 33 when I took the exam. The end date or the end age limit to take the state police exam was age 35. I mean, I'm just going to take it. At least I'll have it. Got another 97. So I was literally the last chosen off of that list, the beginning of the list, the first class off of that list. And I jumped ship.
Yeah.
Left my job at Harvard in the middle of March. And on my 34th birthday, and just never looked back.
That's, you know, I'm happy you became an athletic trainer and was at Harvard, because we never would have met. So I think the connection is, you know, I look back, like I said, to those days, and there was a lot learned, and it didn't have to be the teaching. It was the watching, like how everybody did what they did. Right. And it's, like I said, I still talk about those days as being probably one of the best experiences I had, especially when ML grabs you by the back of the ear and pulls you in his office and would like read you the riot act, which he did to me at one point. Yeah. But that's how you became better at your craft. And then, you know, you look back and you say, you know, what would I have done differently? I think for me, I probably would have asked more questions and asked more, you know, of what I could do to become better. But I think over the years, as we worked with each other, you know, other colleagues, I feel like we've done that over time. But I think you obviously made a great decision to go to the state police. As I look down through your resume, what you were doing in the state police amazes me, you know, from crime scene to trafficking to all this stuff that I'm like, that is pretty badass, to be honest with you. Like, I could never see myself doing it, but to know that you did it, I think you kind of hit it, you know, kind of out of the park when you were, you know, you got out of the state police.
Yeah, well, I agree. I just, you know, I had done a little guest lecturing or in uniform. We call it Dog and Pony Show. We go at the high school. We talked to kids. I was working crime scene at the time. It was at Fontbonne Academy, an all-girls school. And the headmaster had called me ahead of time. She said, would you just do me a favor and just show these kids that although you went to school for athletic training and you have 6 years of education behind you in that, that you deviated, that you grew, that you pivoted, that all the, you know, those proper words that leave us through COVID, that you still saw an opportunity and you took it. And then you go to an education in that, you know, because I went on to get my master's in criminal justice as well. And she wanted to show these young girls who were sort of like pigeonholed to be lawyers or doctors or were following the legacy of their family that, you know, you're not going to have to decide at age 17 what you're going to do for the rest of your life. And there's, you'll grow and you'll learn and you'll be, you know, there'll be other opportunities. When you sort of said that, that's exactly what I was thinking when I was just trying to say to those girls, like, get an education. Just get out there, put yourself out there, and then, you know, get your undergraduate degree in finance, business, basket weaving, and then get your master's in whatever skill you really want to hone in on. If you know you want to be a nurse tomorrow, then let's go that route. But if you don't stress about it, this is like, you know, you got a whole life ahead of you.
There's a lot of time to be able to figure it out. You know, you don't need to do it in 4 years. And I think a lot of kids jump at opportunity, which is good, but I feel like they get into it at the age they're getting into it, and they have no idea what they're getting into.
Yeah, declaring a major at 17.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a lot.
I mean, my daughter, or I should say our daughter, my wife and I, she wanted to be a marine biologist and went in for every school she applied to was marine biology. And she, a semester, she pivoted and said, I took a class, I think the beginning of her second semester, was in speech, you know, communicative disorders. And she said, I really don't think I should be a marine biologist. I feel like sitting behind a microscope isn't me. And, you know, I want to research sharks, but you know what? I'm not going to be on a boat for the rest of my life. And what's that look like for financial stability, right? So she's thinking of this. And she said, I think I want to be a speech pathologist. So she went through, switch majors, declared a second major in French. So she was a double major. Because she has a background in French through her public school education. And then now she's in grad school for speech language pathology. And she wants to work with adults with traumatic brain injury, which I'm like, that's like right up the alley. Like, that's perfect. So for her, again, like it's they're figuring it out. Right. And I think like you had mentioned, like you wanted to, your dad wanted you to do this. And you're like, I want to stay the course and become an athletic trainer. This is what I'm doing. And finally, it was that moment where I got a year. I got to take care of this and do this. Like, this is my last chance. And you made the best of it. And, you know, you then went, yeah.
I actually had a huge discussion with my brother, who was a patriarch of my family since my dad had passed. And I said, what do you think I should do? And he literally said, take the state job, get a pension, you'll be set for life. Take the state job that first round. And I didn't. So,
yeah. And now what he's saying, now what does he say to you?
We lost, it was literally 7 years. He goes, you could have been 7 years more vested if you took it. And I'm like, I wasn't ready. It was okay. But again, absolutely. Like you said, I would never met you. Wouldn't have had half the experiences I've had. Harvard is a very special place. It still holds very near and dear to me. I still feel very connected to a lot of the people that, you know, I grew up with. We all grew up there, right? Like we did life as we were speaking about earlier, like we did life together. We took care of each other. We were all within that age group of, you know, plus or minus 5 years of each other. And, you know, I have absolutely no regrets. Except when I first got onto the job, they were like, oh, what did you used to do? And I was like, I was an athletic trainer. They're like, where? I'm like, oh, at a Division I school. And I would leave it at that.
Yeah, you wouldn't tell us. It's interesting because of a couple former Harvard athletes I crossed paths with 15 years after I was at Harvard. And they're Weston and Wellesley residents. And I took care of their children. So it's like awesome. Like we talk about the days of being in the training room, like them joking about MO, like joking around, you know, taping people or evaluating them. And they always go back to those. They said those are the best days of their college, you know, experience was being in the training room. And I actually had a conversation with Ted Johnson. Ted's kids, he lived in Wayland. He helped coach Weston for a couple seasons, like when he retired, as a favor of one of the coaches that knew him. And he came into my office and he goes, Riz, I love the training room, man. I always love the training room, being in Colorado, being in New England. Trainer's the best. And he would come in and he would just kind of hang out in my office. My daughter was like 5 and she's looking up at this guy who's a behemoth, you know, but like to hear that from a pro athlete too, like they really respect what you do. I think that's important.
Well, one of my colleagues that we're co-founders of Better Together, she would say, you are my people. Even whether I was injured or not, I get my daily dose of the athletic training room. And like we used to pull pranks on her. Like we made her speak into a speaker and announce her name, her sport, and why she was in the athletic training room. And Emma would yell, "Speak up, we can't hear you. It's not going to record properly." And she would like, we, the laughs that we had. And again, those are the ties that bind. We are, you know, we still have an amazing friendship 25, 30 years later.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome.
And it's their comfort zone. It's their safe space.
Yeah. So briefly, you were the athlete trainer and actually developed a program with the Mass State Police. How'd that happen? Like, how did that work out?
Okay, so I hated the State Police Academy.
As probably most did.
The only people that were really nice to me was the medical staff. And they're still near and dear to me to this day. But they would always just reassure me. They'd, you know, give me a wink, or they'd be like, "Hey, you're doing fine. Don't let the bastards get you down." And but I think they ultimately had a plan for me, that they knew my credentials. They knew, you know, what I was capable of, and they wanted me on staff. So once you graduate, there's usually like an unspoken rule that you cannot apply for any specialty units or, you know, outside the box, outside of patrol assignment, because you got to earn your keep and you got to, you know, it's a rite of passage and all that stuff. And within 3 years, I had got a call and said, "Hey, you know, we want you to come and interview. Yes. We want you part of our medical staff." And I was like, no. My sergeant was like, "Do it. They're asking for you. Go do it. And I was like, "Okay." So I did it. And it was just like, I had an interview. I had nothing to lose. And it was the best interview ever, because I had something to offer that they didn't have. They didn't have my credentials. They didn't have my expertise. They didn't have my wherewithal, my know-it-all, my humanitarian approach, all of it. And I was a lot different than they had in the past, where like kids would have an ankle injury. And you have to realize, when you attend the Mass State Police Academy, it's a live-in academy, 6 months, you give up everything. People are trying to refinance or remortgage their homes. They can't do anything Monday through Friday. You're literally on like a lockdown. You have no life outside of that academy. So you're so embedded in it. And if you get injured, you don't know your fate. Mm-hmm. You've given up your job. You've walked away from your job. You've started a new career. You know, your family's rooting for you. And, you know, very much like athletics, where you're just like, I can't feel it. Mm-hmm. You have pressure. So you sprain your ankle and you're literally stuck sitting on the ground with ice on your ankle while everybody's continuing their daily routine. Everybody's going through PT. Everybody is, and I say PT is physical training. Everybody's busting their butt. And you're like, you would be labeled like medical muffin. And there was a little bit of that, like, you know, locker room type hazing and name calling. And it was like, so derogatory. And then I came in and I was like, okay, you know, they put an athletic training room sign. They built a room for me and everything. I had tables. I had ordered a secondhand hydroculator that somebody had given me. I went to the local, I mean, we're in the middle of nowhere, Massachusetts, went to the local clinic, met a couple of the doctors, said, you know, "Can I work under your umbrella?" And they were, it was a win-win. They needed us and we needed them. Literally, we'd have to take somebody to the hospital. We'd make a call. We'd, you know, get right in. Trainees would be taken care of, and we'd turn around and move along. Prior to me, there was no treatment, no modalities, no soap notes, no treatment plan, nothing. And I had a lot of time on my hands, because it was in the middle of nowhere, Mass, and it was a big commute. I worked literally, had to be there. It was an hour and a half commute. Had to be there at 5:30 in the morning. Really? I usually worked till about 5:30 at night. So sometimes I would just stay in the dorms, and I'd be in my dorms, like on my computer, doing charts and graphs and like just giving graphics to our hierarchy, our administration. The commandant of the academy, we built a great report, because I would say, you know, it was so easy before. I was like, "Andrew's a wimp. Andrew's just cutting corners." No, it's not. He's trying here. He's afraid. He's afraid to injure himself. He's, you know, and hurt himself further that he won't be able to go on. So it, to the detriment of the people that followed me, because I like made my position that they couldn't get anybody else of lesser value. They actually hired a PA, which I was excited about. She was actually a true grad that had gone to PA school, went through the academy, and then I talked her into staying, and she took over the reins once I left. But it wasn't like that. I actually had a Northeastern co-op student who lived locally. She came in and worked under my guidance and tutelage, and again, exposed athletic training to the Mass State Police that trains their own. They, no outsiders are in everything they do. It's just all internal. Mm-hmm. So to have me and my credentials, my experience, I just brought them added value, and I wanted it to be like they couldn't live without us. And I think I got pretty far. And then over time, again, they're still doing their own. But honestly, I think if I went in today and said, listen, this is exactly what you need. You need a full-time athletic trainer. It would be a great conversation to have with them because, like, you know, corporate wellness, all athletic trainers in different settings, it falls in line. But be mindful that this was in 2002.
Yeah. Yeah.
That we had co-op students and an athletic trainer on staff.
That's pretty good.
And that was like revolutionary, right? Because we didn't do that. But now we do, which is
That's awesome because we talk a lot about other opportunities for athletic trainers in different settings. And, you know, municipalities is one of them, and the military and government positions, because there's always a need. Everybody is an active individual at some level. So you need to be able to have people that are aligned. So if that's athletic training, physical therapy, sports science, nutrition, mental health, like all of that needs to be under one umbrella to provide the best care for your employees and for the people that are your, that are trying to work for the organization and build a strong organization. Yeah. So and that's like awesome.
At the end, when they do assessments, it was literally, there was 101 trainees that graduated and 101 trainees said,
that's fantastic.
How important I was in my role and to them.
Yeah. Awesome. That's a great story.
Yeah.
So you could tell that to many more to come, right?
I hope so.
So fast forward, great state police career. You retired a sergeant, correct? Congratulations on that. That's fantastic. I think one of the reasons why we connected and we really want to start this conversation is to talk about kind of the mental health and well-being of, you know, adolescents and athletes and kind of the venture that you're on to now, kind of post-retirement, and that's Athletes Better Together. Can you explain what that is and how that is an important piece to young adolescent athletes or just young adolescents in general? Can you give the listeners a little background on what it is?
Absolutely. We are a program to help basically high school athletes transitioning into the college setting, college athletics. We work with high schools and club teams and individuals to get them sort of like a group session where we have all the kids on one call. We discuss expectation, values exploration. We do mental skill building. We do it's just all about training and getting these kids exposed to certain topics and certain. As far as like what to expect, like they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
So if we put this in front of them and say, you know, as a panel discussion, we have our mental health professionals sit and talk about, okay, does everybody understand what's expected? And of course, everybody say, yeah. But it's more, how do you handle things? How do you work through issues or like you're hard? Like college is hard. College athletics is even harder. How do we get them in a position and a posture to handle the hard? And we do a curriculum based on that. But the sort of what sets us apart is our mentoring. We literally assign each and every athlete that signs into our program a mentor. And that mentor is usually an upper class college athlete that comes in and meets with them, calls them, Zooms them, on a regular basis throughout our program to, you know, discuss what they went through, just unique experiences and different challenges that they had and expectations. The same thing as far as, like, I had this situation with my coach, but based on what they've learned in our curriculum, I actually met with my coach and it was the best thing that I could ever do.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, everybody has a different lens. The coach is looking at it A, B, and C, and the kid is looking at it X, Y, Z.
Right.
But we say, no, your coach is actually looking at it X, Y, Z. You're just misinterpreting it, or you haven't discussed it through. And we sort of give those kids that leadership property, if you will, to say, to speak up for themselves, to advocate for themselves, to find that level of communication with their teammates, or their, you know, if there's any friction in the locker room, just to sit down one-on-one with somebody and unpack it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now, it's just get grappled by all that. Oh, things aren't going my way. The coach hates me. My teammates don't like me. I missed that shot. That's not real reality, right?
Yeah.
To them it is, and we meet them where they're at, but we step them back and we're like, okay, well, how would you talk to somebody that missed that last shot?
Yeah. It's an interesting concept, because you look at just, you know, moving from, you know, something you're comfortable doing in a high school, right? And moving to somewhere new, to new community, new family, away from home. You feel like you're on an island by yourself. And we experienced this. My daughter, when she was a freshman, you know, you go to school, you drop the kids off, they meet kids, and all of a sudden, 2 days later, they're calling you crying on the phone, right? So it's who do they turn to? The schools always talk about mental health, mental health, mental health. Well, they have counseling sessions. They have this session over here that's a peer review, a peer group. But the kids don't go do that, right? The kids aren't going to go knock on the psychiatrist's door or go over to the counseling center because they feel like it's going to be a stigma or, you know, a stamp on them. Like, oh, you're going to see the counselor? Like, what's going on? So I like the concept, because this sounds like app-based. You're part of this program. You can talk to someone else that's been in your situation, being able to talk to them face-to-face, right, on a phone or an app. To help you through a situation. And it can be.
Well, this is literally like a Zoom call and a connection. We're trying to make those connections. We're building relationships. We're saying that we're putting in front of you, here is somebody that has been there, done that. So we connect them and we are saying that, you know, you're not alone.
Yeah.
You are not alone. And that's the beauty of it. And, as you know, some of these kids, they really think that they're the only ones going through this term.
And by the way, 10 more kids in their team are probably going through the same thing.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, they feel like they're on an island. And, you know, they're the first one that didn't pass a class or weren't doing well in a class or an exam, and taking it over to, I always call it on the other side of the river. Because that's how we always looked at it. When you went to the other side of the river, it was all academics. When you came to our side of the river, it was all fun and games, right? And the kids could let their hair down. And we welcomed them. And, you know, we were talking earlier about, we had a lot of the sillies, right? Like, we loved those kids and they loved us. It was one big family, you know, dysfunction and all, but we were a family and it was a safe space for those kids to go. But I think now, with the added responsibilities of fall sports in the spring sports in the fall, everybody's doubling down on different teams and sports and responsibilities. And oh yeah, now you're a true athletic administrator and you have a title of, you know, associate, and, you know, now you have to do the budget. Now you have to go to all the meetings. And then, like, there's just so much on the staff's plate that the kids get lost in the shuffle a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
What we're trying to do is mentally prepare these kids for the next level, as far as being like, okay, this is what to expect. It's not going to be a cakewalk. You're going to have 2-a-days. You're going to have to figure out all by yourself how to fuel your body, how to schedule your day. There's a lot with even, you know, athletes or even upperclassmen that, you know, there's a practice schedule, there's a game schedule, there's a lifting schedule, there's a film schedule. It's a full-time job. And oh yeah, you still have to go to school and do well.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Your eligibilities. I think our platform Better Together is, it invites that knowledge to the kid at the door to say, this is what to expect. You're going to be fine if you need help. And by the way, here are a bunch of skill sets that you can utilize. Here's self-talk. Here's mindfulness. Here's breath work. Here's visualization. Here's your purpose. You have grit. Sometimes you got to dig deeper, right? And just doing it positively, just to build that resilience, because some of these kids haven't had resilience, a lot of it. You know, they haven't had major challenges. Hypothetically, what if they get injured? Then what do? They're just going to pack it in? No, yeah. You're going to adapt. You're going to overcome. You're going to listen to your professional team. You're going to talk to the athletic trainers. You might even see a physical therapist. You're going to work through this. And like our big picture is, you know, our tagline is better together, right? Like we are. Nobody can do this alone, life in general. And these kids at that, you know, adolescent into adulthood time frame, we just want to support that. And it's incredible work. It's amazing work. The student athletes are just, they're a pleasure to be around. They listen. They want to learn. And for us to put that mental skill set in front of them, they don't realize they needed it, right? They don't realize, like, you know, if your shot's off, what are you going to do? You're going to physically condition yourself, your body to do this.
Right.
So off, it could be my head's not in the game. I'm goofing off. I'm not focused on my fundamentals. And we sort of bring them back to that. And in addition, like we've let them know, like, what's your why? We ask them, why do you play sports? Does it bring you joy?
Yeah.
And we want them to feel that. We want them to feel that joy again. Why did you get into this? Why did you start it? What did it used to feel like? What does it feel like now? And how can we improve it?
Now, what,
mental.
Given your experience, you know, as a state trooper, how does that prepare you to be able to, and an athlete trainer, I should say, your experience bring, you know, some more, I guess, outside vision to this, like this platform? I'm thinking more or less, like when we think of mental health awareness or how people, like you said, bring people together, everybody's better together. Your experiences and what you've had to deal with, like, is that something that people want to listen to and hear and you can help them with it? Like thinking of along the lines of that, just again, that mental health aspect and how to manage that. Like some of the situations you were in.
Yeah. We actually went to a panel discussion that Dr. Kim O'Brien, who is our co-founder of Better Together, she was doing a presentation. And I left, and I'm looking at the campus of Boston College, where she went to school as well, to get her doctorate in police and social work and all that stuff. That's where she honed in her mental health professional skills. And I'm like, maybe I should go back to school. And I'm like, I already have 2 master's degrees.
Yeah.
I'm getting old. But honestly, I stopped for a moment and said, I could probably teach some of those classes. Maybe not the entire curriculum. But I could definitely come in as a guest speaker. I could definitely come in as, you know, somebody trauma-informed. I literally, you know, I saw dead people all day, every day. And that in itself, you just don't see it. You have to unpack it. You have to figure out what brought them there, whose issues you have to sort through. Never mind finding out who the suspect is and who the perpetrator is, who did this and why. So that's a whole nother ball of wax. But, you know, we literally had jurisdiction over anybody in the Commonwealth. So it was homicide, suicide, unattended deaths, suspicious deaths. So a lot of it, we would just have to figure out, like, okay, why did this person take their own life? There's a story.
Mm-hmm.
There's a story. You know, we guys in the field that would handle that. What is the story? What happened? Why? Through the autopsy, we'd have to figure out, you know, was it drugs? Was it a gun shot? Was it hanging, self-harm, obviously, all of that. So I'm an observer. I'm a trained observer. I'm very empathetic. I take everything in. You know, I feel for people. I feel like, wow, how did this happen? And, you know, in the words of Ted Lasso, I'm always curious. So I'm a consummate learner. So I want to know what happened. You know, if it was a young kid, it was an elderly person, it was a husband, an ex-husband, a child. What were their issues? What's going on? Even when I was doing investigating crimes of human trafficking, you know, what brings these girls to this juncture? And a lot of it was the opioid epidemic. A lot of it was, you know, they didn't value themselves. They had no self-worth. They, you know, started going down a very wrong path. And then the first person that says, hey, you know, somebody meets you on a train platform and starts talking you up and you're intrigued and you happen to go with that person. Then all of a sudden you're literally in prison and you are trafficked by that person and you are turning tricks 15 times a day as a 23-year-old.
Yeah. It's sad, but I mean, also very powerful coming from someone that's, you know, for you seeing it, but as a female, right. And also as a state police and a retiree that has seen it, been there, done it. No, I think it's powerful and it speaks a lot of volumes to the people that are listening. And this whole piece of mental health, it kids think that, you know, it could be, it's never going to get worse. It's never going to get worse. It's never going to get worse. And then you're like, well, yes, it can. Like, this is something that you have to really speak to somebody about and learn about yourself and what's important. And yes, things are going to get better and hopefully not get worse for you. But I think I ended up taking a mental health first aid class and I got a certificate in mental health first aid. And it blew me away what we had to ask each other, like as being someone that came to us. So for us to be able to recognize now when we're dealing with an athlete, like if they're in distress, like there are triggers that you're going to see and things that you're going to ask them and be very blunt about it so you can get them the help they need. And I think it's important for us to recognize that.
You can't say, oh, geez, I wonder. No, you can't wonder. Yeah. You have to say, wonder.
Do you think you're going to harm yourself? Are you thinking about committing suicide? Like, yeah. It's hard, but you have to be able to do it in order to make sure that you can provide for that person what they need.
Yes. And even like, you know, we talk about the victim side and my expertise that, you know, I'd have to ask those questions. So why did you do it? Why did that happen? How did that happen? But then I would also have to do the flip side and be like, it's not your fault. He exploited you. He found your vulnerability. He took charge of you. He's 45 years old. You are 22 years old. There's a big difference there. So I would have to sort of like coach them up and you know, I've shed many tears and had many hugs and I've interacted with many family members about it's going to be okay. She's free now. Get some help. Work through this. You know, I'm here. If, you know, they need to literally try to figure out what else is going on, like everything, like with the case that we were doing, an indictment or prosecution about where that suspect currently is, what, you know, if they're up for parole, all of it. Like you'd have to always inform the victims. Being trauma informed, I worked a lot with the hostage negotiation team. We always have to worry about de-escalation. I used to do Section 12s and Section 13s under the state statute. If somebody is going to harm themselves or others, I would be the guy filling out the paperwork in an attempt to have them committed to a 30-day program. I'd always work with the families. I'd work with clinicians. I don't carry the whole, you know, diploma of mental health. I am very well-versed in a lot of it. Worked a lot with the homeless, sat with homeless people and how'd you get here?
Yeah.
And having those blunt conversations and learning that somebody's brother took a 12-gauge shotgun to his head when, you know, she was 11 and she's
like,
then being in an abusive relationship and then this and that and being like, and here you are. How can I help you?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, degree or no degree, I want you on my team because I feel like there's a story, right? And if anybody has any question of what they need to do to get help, you know, it sounds like you're doing the right thing and you guys have something here that's going to be amazing if it, you know, morphs into more of what you're trying to do with one, just get kids as high school seniors to college and get them to understand like, hey, there's someone there to listen. But also if things go sideways, there is somebody to listen. Right. And I think that's important. Like you got to hit the panic button, right? Almost like, hey, I need help. Is anybody else dealing with this? Can I talk to someone?
It's conditioning, right? It's conditioning to not have that like mental challenge or a breakdown or however you want to look at that. But we want to have these, give these kids the opportunity to say, I know how to handle that. Mm-hmm. Practice it. I've learned it. It's a form of prevention, right? If they're exposed to it and they've had the discussions about it and they've had the curriculum about it, to say, I'm not going to get on that path. I'm just going to observe it. I'm not going to absorb it. Right. My teammates are doing this, that, and the other thing. I'm not going to jump in 2 feet. I may still, you know, put my 1 foot in, but I can't. I don't have the capacity to do this, nor should I. So, and we're learning a lot from the Boston Celtics right now, right? Like they're like defraying a lot of, you know, the talk and who's better and, you know, do you deserve to be there? And even Coach Mazzola is really big on mental conditioning. You know, some of the guys have said, oh, he takes us out of the box. And the Boston Celtics have a clinician on staff that mm-hmm. travels with them, that pays attention to the staff. Like when you go away, you're leaving your family. You know, you're missing milestones. You're missing celebrations and birthdays and all that stuff. And, you know, you're on a 10-day road stretch out to the West Coast. So who's there to help you, even as a grown adult, never mind the players or in our realm, college athletes, you're alone. Are you going to call your mom at 2 o'clock in the morning? Maybe. Right. But where's that going to get you? It might get you more tears. It's not going to give you great progression in learning how to deal with this hard all by yourself. Cause that's what life is about. Right. Yeah. Although yeah. you're not alone, you're front row and center. You got to figure it out. And then bring in your team, your relationships, your inner circle to say, ah, I really want to, you know, scream at my coach and cry and quit. But, you know, you're going to have a trusted adult and a mentor, you know, our team in particular that are together to say, no, don't let them get the best of you. You can handle it. Why mm-hmm. they recruited you. They thought you were amazing. Now let's go prove it.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit how you guys are kind of grow this organically. What's the goal? Like, where do you guys want to be? What does this vision look like?
We want to make sure that we put these kids in a posture to handle hard. We don't want kids to go off to college to play athletics and quit. We don't want kids to go off to college athletics and be overwhelmed and go through many hardships that they can avoid. Right. If they have a mentor, if they have somebody that they can just speak to or somebody that can prep them, you know, those 2 days are really hard. In between, go take your nap, make sure you hydrate, make sure you do this. Cause, you know, as parents, nobody's listening to you. Even as athletic trainers, you're talking to the group and as peers, they're not going to seek you out at that sort of intimate level where they're like, oh, help me. What do I do? You know, you're talking to the group, hey, hydrate. It goes in one ear, out the other.
Yes, it does.
But if they have a mentor, a closer person, and somebody that's not embedded in the team, that isn't a coach, that they can just, you know, text or give a call to and say, hey, you know, I'm really having a hard time with this. I did that too.
Yeah, outside source, right? They're more likely to listen.
So that's sort of what our big picture is at Better Together. You know, we're a team, and the two women that co-founded this with me, they're former college athletes. They've been through hard. They each individually have had a teammate take their own life. Mm-hmm. And that is everlasting. That is impactful. And I, fortunately, and maybe unfortunately, were there with them and for them during that, you know, moment of crisis in their dearest friend's life.
And they when no one else wanted to listen, I'm sure, right?
Yeah. And I have always asked the tough questions. How do you feel about that? wow, you know, I wonder what brought them to that door, you know, and how can we help? Mm-hmm. That's the big thing. We're all like just happy to help. If we could save one kid's life, volumes. And you would be surprised, the kids that go to college, the kids, and I've had that experience that I've had athletes many, many, many years later approach me at an event or give me a call or text me and say, you saved my life.
And yeah, it's amazing. Go,
and I'm like, yeah. No, I had a plan. I was going to do A, B, and C. You know, you smiled at me. You hugged me. You gave me a kick in the butt. You said something that resonated with me and it thwarted my opportunity. And sometimes it's all you need, right?
Yeah, it's powerful. You step back and you think about it for a second. And it's how many people that you did have contact with that haven't mentioned that, or, you know, had to go elsewhere for help or didn't, you know, or still holding it in, right? So I think that's an important piece that you have to kind of always look at is I think it's your actions that speak volumes to what you provide every day to people. And you may not think that it's impactful, but there will be that day where they come back and say, hey, you know, you made a difference in my life. And that's the thanks that we like to hear. Like, it was never always, you're going to get thanked every day you're working with an athlete or a patient because it's a thankless job. But it's the stories later on that you hear like, hey, you made a difference in my life that makes it worthwhile.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what we're trying to build. We're trying to build connection, trying to build relationships. We're trying to build bridges. Like, we want these kids, even after our program, to be comfortable if they just get to a juncture where they're having more hardship. Then, you know, go seek out a counselor. And if you don't know where to go, give us a call.
Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully these
navigate through that. Right. And not be afraid. And it's okay. And I love the fact that so many more professional athletes, so many more of these iconic players that are role models for our kids are coming out and saying, you know, Kevin Love, I had a panic attack on the court during a game. That's okay. And I had many people to support me, and I laid on the athletic training room floor and my trainer said, how can I help you?
Yeah. Yep. And yep. I had it happen with an athlete a couple of years ago, panic attack in the middle of the football field, wouldn't get up. It was like the world was ending. It was crashing down on him. Like, we just said, we'll stay out here as long as you need us to stay out here. When you are ready, we'll move. I don't care if it takes an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, whenever you're ready. And we were able to get him to, you know, feel comfortable, come off the field with us. And then we had a really nice conversation. So I think he looks back at that and feels like, hey, there were people there for me versus just people thinking there's something wrong with me, you know,
and we really invest in conditioning and, you know, individual sessions. And I want to get my jump shot just right. And I want to get my wrist shot, you know, on par. That's great. Your athletic prowess, you're there. But when you're mentally not in the game, all that stuff is going to fall by the wayside. We want to give you that resilience. We want to give you that drive. We want to give you that clarity of this is why I'm doing it. Like, we've all been in the zone, right? Like, there's nothing like that, that you're unstoppable. And, you know, that's the ultimate goal, not to trudge through a game and barely catch points. You're watching Jason Tatum go into a little bit of it now. It's like, he'll get back easy because he has people around him to support him and to work with him and mm-hmm. work on that, you know, positive self-talk and the visualization and the meditation and to get him through next steps. It's like, it's okay. And nobody hates you.
Yeah. And the good thing about what you guys are doing too, this is going to resonate with these young athletes and these young adults for the rest of their life. And it's going to help them in their career later on when they run into a difficult situations. If they learn how to manage it now and understand how to do it in the correct way, they're going to be very successful in whatever they do, which is important.
You can look at it like prevention, right?
Yeah.
You condition yourself.
That's awesome.
So you don't sprain your ankle. You do appropriate section. You do all these conditioning drills and you get stronger. Well, what's going on up here?
Exactly. I always say it's taking care of the top third of the athlete most of the time, right? And we talk about it and we joke about it, but it's serious. Like, if we can control that, we can control them to the point where they understand how to get back into what they love to do and do it safely. And we always talk about it.
You can prevent injuries that way.
Yeah.
And you rehab a lot faster that way. And, you know, you just kind of shut that down and say, it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm on a course. This is the process, right? We are focused on the process.
Yeah. Listen, I think you guys are doing an amazing job. I'm excited to see how this grows. I want to be kind of watching from the outside in, but I also want to be like that person that knows more so I can help people. If somebody that's listening wants to get in touch with you guys, how do they do that? If they want you to come in and talk, I'm hoping a lot of people listen to this podcast, but I'm going to try to get it out to as many people as I can. And, if we can get something to happen, I'd love to have you guys come over to Westing. So I think it would be amazing to get you there at some point. I know you guys are busy, but if someone wants to reach you, how do they do it?
So we are Better Together. We do have a website, www.athletesbettertogether.com. That's our focus, athletes. We're on LinkedIn. We are on Instagram under Athletes Better Together. And just reach out. Our website is probably the best way to contact us. You can learn more about myself, Dr. Kim O'Brien, Daphne Faldi, our group, our story, and why, you know, we're doing this work. Obviously, Daphne's an educator and Kim is a mental health professional. And I am hopefully as a glue that keeps it all together.
You are a badass is what you are.
And, you know, we're just doing really great things. And by the way, we're moms.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's awesome. Like I was,
we have kids. Kids are in college. Yeah. Like we're doing it.
Yeah, I was talking to an athlete last year, and she wants to go to West Point to play soccer. And she's a good athlete. And I said, she's just going to be a sophomore this year. And I said, why West Point? She's like, well, my dad went to West Point, and so did my mother. And he said, my dad was infantry and my mother was a helicopter pilot. I said, what? And she goes, a helicopter pilot. I go, that is badass.
Pressure. No,
I think she flew like Apaches or something. Like I was like, what? Like, this is crazy, but pretty cool. Right. But hats off to you again. I am so happy we connected again. Hopefully as many more conversations between us, and we'll have to get Anthony out. And once the season's over and get together, it'd be awesome.
No, that would be great. And we could talk forever. So thank you so much.
I know.
Really appreciate it. And thanks for highlighting Athletes Better Together, because this is my mission. Like, this isn't a job. This is just my quest to just try to help, you know, this generation that's coming along, that's under all sorts of, you know, many different pressures than you and I ever had.
It's crazy.
And we're really happy to help. So
Maura, thanks again. I appreciate your time. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. See ya.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Behind the Sports Medicine podcast, proudly sponsored by AJR Sports Science and Healthcare Consulting. At AJR, we're committed to offering a comprehensive range of exceptional services, including applied sports science analytics, healthcare and sports medicine consulting, and leadership and coaching development. To learn more about AJR, visit their website at ajrsportsscience.com. This is your host, Andrew Rizza. If you enjoyed today's episode, give us a like, comment, and share it on social media. Access all of our episodes on platforms such as Apple, Spotify, or your preferred podcast app. Stay updated by following us on Instagram at Behind Sports Med Podcast, on X at AJR Sports Sci, or visiting our website at ajrsportsscience.podbean.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at AJR Sports Science for upcoming content. Thank you for tuning in, and stay tuned for our next episode.